Bet on Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the designer, Shay Norling back in the building. Been a little while, Shay. We've been shows been pushed off a couple of times, a holiday weekend.
And yeah, then, a couple weeks.
Hey, a couple weeks. It's been a little time. How you been, my guy?
I've been great.
Have you?
Happy to be back.
It's always good to have you here. We got a lot to get into on today's episode. We got to start this off. The football fanatics are going to skip ahead, but that's okay, because I got to start this off with a lunch order I heard that I could only think of one person to have this conversation with. Me and Shay Norling got to hash that out. Okay. Also, take a look at the offensive line. Courtney Cronin said something on the podcast on Friday that I think is really interesting when it comes to whose job it is to lose at this left tackle position. And then, DJ Moore for Tyreek Hill.
Mike Florio. Just throwing chum in the water.
Which I love that it literally is just like, let me stir something up real quick.
Yeah.
It's a long shot, but boom, we'll talk about all that more.
Slow news week. We got to get some content out there, and I'm sure there's been nuanced reaction.
Oh, of course. There's only nuance when you come to the DJ Moore, Tyreek Hill conversation. Hey, today's episode is brought to you by the Hard Rock Casino in Northern Indiana, located 30 minutes from Soldier Field, I-80-94, exit 6. Also brought to you by the Advantage Dealer Group. Find your next Chevy, Toyota, or Acura and drive off in under 60 minutes, or they'll make your first car payment. Let's start it off with this, Shay, because, again, I know we're going to piss off the football purists, but I saw this and I can only think of one person.
God forbid a show try to be fun.
I can only think of one person to have this conversation with, because on a tough sports night, I feel like we've all been here when you have this meal. Now, this was not a tough sports night. This was just kind of going out there and apparently enjoying this meal a lot. But one of the producers, Zach, from Pardon My Take,
okay,
talked about his late night order that has him in a chokehold right now. He's had this for about, he's had this meal either his fourth or fifth time in the week when he had talked about this. Would you be willing to go here on a bad sports night? Two double cheeseburgers, no pickle, extra onion. This is from McDonald's.
Ooh.
Two large fries. 20 nuggets.
Jesus.
And he's finishing off the night with a pint or two of ice cream, preferably Ben and Jerry's favorite flavor.
What in
Netflix
the world?
And chill. Would you be in on this order after a tough sports night? I have had some bad orders. That's a little much.
Maybe when I was in college. What is that? It's like 8,000 calories. I thought two cheeseburgers from McDonald's was getting a little adventurous, the two large fries. Then you add in 20 nuggets, and I'm like, what on earth are we doing?
My favorite part is when you watch him talk about it, and Barstool, Big Cat, and PFT both bring this out. They're like, you throw the nuggets in there like it's nothing.
No,
like,
that's insane.
Throwing the nuggets in there like garnish.
20 nuggets is crazy. The meal is a 10-piece. You're getting two meals plus 20 nuggets and then two pints of ice cream.
Yeah.
You said two pints. I thought you were going to tell me beer.
No.
Then you went to ice cream, preferably Ben and Jerry's. And I'm like, what in the world?
Dog, I saw this order and I was like, I have had some bad sports. The Bulls have sent me to Taco Bell a couple of times.
There were times.
I'm not gonna pretend like I haven't sat there with a couple of quesaritos on my lap, just upset.
There are times like you have a rough night and you just order a sad pizza and you house it right to the dome, eight slices. Slices going down the gullet. That's insane. That order is insane. It's such a mishmash of things, too. How on earth do you have two cheeseburgers with extra onion, so your breath is horrific, two fries, 20 nuggets, and still have room for ice cream?
I'm not going to lie to you. It's one of the more impressive things. Now, he did say he's been at Barstool, I believe, 4 weeks.
He said
he's gained 20 pounds in the 4 weeks he's been at Barstool.
Four or five times he said that in a week?
He said that's probably the fourth or fifth time this week that I've had that meal.
No, that's unforgivable.
And that, you know, sometimes you get in a chokehold, which I do agree with. There are orders that you get that sometimes get you in a chokehold where you're like, this is my go-to for a little while here. But oof.
That's unbelievable.
I love the fact that he is the nuggets are just thrown in. That's the best part of this movie, bro.
I don't love sad McDonald's as an option.
Really?
Like, no, if it's a bad night or a bad sports night and I want to drown my sorrows in some food, it's sad pizza. Always.
I'm not mad at a sad pizza. I've done sad Taco Bell.
I think of Urban Meyer after Michigan State beat them in the Big Ten title game, and you saw Urban Meyer on a golf cart looking like he was going to weep in the bowels of Lucas Oil Stadium, munching on a slice of pizza.
Yeah.
That's what sad pizza is, what a bad sports night is about. Not that.
Sad McDonald's is too far. The one thing I didn't do, and I probably should have, how much is this costing?
I know. I was just going to say.
The 2 pints of Ben and Jerry's alone, you're at $10.
No, more than that.
You're at more than that?
Oh,
Where's
yeah.
Ben and Jerry's?
Where are you
now?
Getting your Ben and Jerry's?
14? I'm not a
Ben maybe more
Jerry's
than that. Dude,
if I go to the
grocery store by my house and look at Ben and Jerry's, it's like $7.99 a pint. We're talking maybe $20 just on that alone after taxes.
He's on a $50 meal then, is kind of what I'm feeling right here.
Yeah, that's insane.
That's a $50 meal.
I have to imagine this guy's no older than 22, 23 years old.
He does look younger. He's making
adult money for the first time in his life. He's living on his own. And instead of making food, it's like, let me just house 8,000 calories of McDonald's.
Let us know in the comments how you guys feel.
I'm 30 years old, man. I can't do that stuff anymore.
I had to start with that. I'm not going to lie to you. See, that is the one thing where it's like every now and then it's a late night. I've drank a little bit. I get in my Fat the Designer mode where I can go down and house a burrito dinner. You know what I mean? Where like I did last Thursday night, finished watching a game, went home, was driving home, called the wife. She's, fresh off having a baby, so always down to eat, still breastfeeding, a lot of calories taken for that. I pull up, I'm like, hey, you want some tacos? I'm thinking about stopping, grab her three steak tacos. I'm knocking down a burrito dinner.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
A little late night Taco Bell never hurts.
Yeah. Well, no, this is from Mexican spot by us.
That's even better.
It's better food, but bigger food.
Oh, for
that
sure.
Burrito is a real burrito. So you're the next morning's hurt a little bit.
You get
bit
the beans and rice with it, too?
Absolutely.
Late night beans and rice
beans
action?
And rice. Phenomenal beans and rice. Let's talk a little football, Shay Norling. Let's stop pissing all the people off. I don't care. I thought this was very interesting.
Weep
openly. And then go have this McDonald's.
Go eat a sad pizza for me.
Go eat a sad pizza. I thought that when we talked about on Friday on the Chicago Bears podcast with Courtney, the left tackle spot going into this rookie mini camp that's going to be starting tomorrow. I'll be up there. So tap in, send questions that you want asked, all that good stuff. Love talking with the guys up there. But I thought when she said this, it really raised the question on where are we really at with the left tackle position right now. She said one thing that the Chicago Bears have done really well with the left tackle spot I think this is the right play, is to continue to tinker there to get Karan Amagaji and Ozzie Trapillo the reps that they need. And she was talking about this at OTAs. When Braxton Jones comes back, then it becomes a competition. But all signs and everything, if you're reading between the lines right now, point to this being Braxton Jones' job to lose. He's had 3 years of starting experience, more than Karan, more than a rookie, and frankly, health aside, because we do need to figure out what he's looking like after coming off of that ankle injury. He is your best option. It's a no-brainer. With where we're at right now, Ozzie Trapillo getting the starting reps at the last OTAs, Karan Amagaji started off 2 days in, sure, getting the starting reps at left tackle. Are the Bears in a good spot at left tackle? We got a lot of names. Do we have a lot of names that we feel good about at that spot?
I liked Ozzie Trapillo at BC. I said that after the draft. I thought it was a good pick. It's hard for me to say they're in a good spot. I think offensive line as a whole on paper, it feels like, is in as good a spot as it's been in a few years. And that always levels up kind of everybody. I'm a big believer that the offensive line's a unit. And if you're a good left tackle with four terrible players on the right of you, you're going to struggle. It's just the reality
of playing
offensive line. Yeah. Exactly. So I would like to see a little bit of, like, I don't think Braxton is a terrible player. I think he's had a terrible interior and kind of a mishmash interior the time that he's been here, whether it's Tevin Jenkins at left guard, if he's healthy or he's getting moved around. Now you kind of have some consistency as long as everybody's healthy. And again, on paper, but it feels like there's consistency on the O-line. So I kind of want to see what Braxton looks like, but I've also just had a sneaking suspicion that when the season starts, I don't feel like Braxton's going to be the starting left tackle.
I don't either.
And I know what Courtney's saying. He's got the starting experience. He's been here. But everybody's learning a new system. It's a new head coach. It's a new offensive line coach. It's a new running game coach or running backs coach. I assume it's going to be a totally new offense in terms of blocking schemes and run fits. I don't feel especially confident that a guy who is not going to practice for the vast majority of offseason programs because of an ankle injury will just come out and no-brainer win the gig. Like, he's played well. The PFF stuff loves him.
Yeah, you know how I feel about it. I think there's a cousin up there or somebody. Because here's my thing, and me and J-Mac have talked about this a ton. One, it's very confusing to me that everybody can go out there and give a grade on offensive line play when you don't know what the scheme is. And I get it. You've got the people up there who are in the O-line. But my favorite thing is J-Mac went when he asked about certain things to Olin Krutz, one of the best line or offensive linemen in Chicago Bears history, bar none, Hall of Famer easily, right? Olin goes, I don't know what scheme they're running. So how do you grade that then? How do you know exactly what's going on? So I always push back on the PFF stuff. I say do everything with the eye test. The eye test for me of Braxton Jones is, they do add this in PFF, 5 sacks allowed last season, 7 penalties last season. He's been somebody who's often been penalized in the NFL where even when drives look good, you get that Braxton Jones false start or he's getting pushed back to heaven. So he's trying to hold on for dear life and he gets a holding call. Like, those are the things that kill drives. Those are the reasons why I look at Braxton right now, even with the PFF numbers, and say, I actually don't know if Ben Johnson is going to think he's the best option at left tackle.
Now, I'll be fair. PFF is film-based. It's just a lot of times it's some guy in Berlin or Belarus who is reviewing the tape and then offering the grade, and they source it. It's a tool in the toolbox. It's not gospel.
Yes.
And I think eye test, like, does he get beat by bull rushes? Yes. Has he allowed too many sacks? Yes. But I also don't know what the blocking scheme is.
Right.
I don't know what the assignment is on every play. And there are times when he does look effective. And how much of the time that he's getting beaten is because the guy next to him isn't doing his job.
Yeah.
So I think offensive line evaluation is brutally difficult. But when I read a lot of the tea leaves, and again, factoring in the fact this guy is not going to participate in the majority, if not all, of the offseason programming, and they're just going to fit him in at left tackle at the start of the season. Well, you drafted Karan Amagaji, you drafted Ozzie Tripillo, you feel like Darnell Wright can play both sides of the line. Like, by hook or by crook, I just don't get the vibe that this season's going to start with Braxton Jones at left tackle. I could be wrong. That's happened before. It'll happen again.
Yeah.
And if he is, I hope he plays well. But I think, on the whole, I look at the unit and I feel like the Bears are in a pretty good spot with the entirety of the offensive line. Like, we think Darnell Wright's pretty good. He started to look like the Pro Bowler you'd expect him to be. You'd hope 10th pick, right tackle, all pro one day.
Yeah.
You added an all pro in Joe Tooney. You added a guy in Drew Dahlman who I really like. You added Jonah Jackson, who's been a Pro Bowler before at right guard. So I feel good about the unit, and then we'll just see what happens at left tackle. But also, Pat, like, I always laugh, you need a dominant left tackle to be successful in the NFL. How many dominant left tackles are there in the league right now?
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot.
Trent Williams is long in the tooth.
It's not a deep group right now.
Laremy Tunsil's a good player. He's also the most penalized offensive lineman in football.
Yeah.
Like, it's there's not a lot of dominant guys. It's Jordan Mailata. To me, it's Jordan Mailata, and then if you want to throw Tristan Wirfs into the conversation, and then beyond that, there's no, like, this is a stud Hall of Fame left tackle.
Yeah.
So it's kind of got to be position by committee. Taylor Decker gets a lot of credit. A big part of that is he's in a group that had Frank Ragnow and, on the opposite side, Penei Sewell, who might be the best tackle in football. I don't go look around the league, though, and see, like, staple franchise cornerstone left tackle all over the place.
Yeah. I'll say this, and I think we are in a different place in the NFL. I think the interior group is much better than the tackle group right now in the NFL. I think that this is not uncommon. It goes through waves. But right now, you've got a lot of guys in the league, and this is really all I'm hoping for from, I don't care who it is, Braxton Jones. If it is Braxton, let it be Braxton. I do think he improves with Joe Tooney standing next to him, especially if the Bears run the football as much as we think they're going to. That's where Braxton's bread and butter is. If it is Ozzie Trapillo who wins this job out of camp, if it is Karan Amagaji who would be probably the surprise of all of this at this point, the goal is, can I forget about you? That's how I feel about my offensive linemen. And we sit here and talk about these guys who are dominant, and they go out there, and after every play, we're like, oh, my God, look at this guy. He did this. We don't do that with offensive linemen. When you're a dominant offensive lineman,
we don't say
your name. You did your job. We didn't say your name. Yeah. You know why we talk about Braxton Jones? Because I've watched him be sacked with my quarterback.
Yep.
Like, that's the thing for me where it's like, the goal this year is maybe not to find the most dominant left tackle. If Ozzie Trapillo is that, that'd be amazing. But my goal is, remember when Braxton first got here and nobody knew he couldn't deal with the bull rush because he didn't tell him? And it was just like, he kind of forgot we got a rookie starting at left tackle. That's nice.
Yeah.
That's really what I'm looking for.
I think the goal, especially if you're a more casual NFL fan, like you're just somebody who flips your team on, you want to see a win, the goal is to not know who is on the offensive line. Like that's... If you're just a regular guy and you're not deep diving NFL teams, you know the good offensive lines from the bad ones, but you don't hear the guys' names.
Yeah.
That's the dream. Like Jordan Mailata is never going to hear his name called. Why? Because he's not getting penalized and he's not making mistakes.
Yeah.
That's what you want to be. That's the sign of a great offensive lineman. It's a thankless job.
Yeah. And well, I don't know about thankless. Listen, if Braxton Jones shows out this year, there's probably a good chunk of change coming his way.
Yeah, definitely.
Joe Tooney got his thank you. You know what I mean?
You get my point.
From the fans.
Absolutely.
Fans,
yeah. Nobody's buying your jersey.
Well, I'll say this. You look at it last year for the Super Bowl. How many people give all the credit to Saquon Barkley for getting them there and not the offensive line?
How many
people are out there that go, Saquon Barkley bounced back, he dominated, he's one of the best running backs you've ever seen, I can't believe the Bears didn't pay him, and we're sitting here going, wish the Bears were going to pay him, that's also a weird thing too. But we sit here and go, did you forget about the five dudes that were giving him a yard and a half before he even got the football in his hands? Like, I think that's important to say, too.
You're preaching to the choir on it. Because, like, everybody looks at the Eagles, and it's why I've been so heavy on wanting edge pressure. It's the same thing. Everybody looks at the Eagles, and they're like, Saquon Barkley won them a Super Bowl. And Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs didn't cross the 50-yard line for, like, 45 minutes of gameplay in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And we go, Saquon Barkley's the reason the Eagles won. No, it's the Hall of Fame defensive line.
And or Hall of Fame offensive line.
Like, that's it.
it's
Josh Sweat and Milton Williams collectively playing the games of their lives, and Jalen Carter being what Jalen Carter is, and their secondary that didn't allow the Chiefs past the 50-yard line for the better part of three quarters in a Super Bowl. That's what won it for them. Not Saquon Barkley. And that's why I've laughed all offseason when people are like, and look, I don't love DeAndre Swift, but... And I wanted running back higher in the draft than Kyle Manungai.
Yeah.
But it was also, I never needed to trade up to get Travion Henderson. I don't feel like going out and signing a star running back changes your fortune that much. The offensive line has to come first, and the defensive line has to come first.
Yeah.
And I'm working on the fly here, but I do wonder a little bit if not prioritizing left tackle to an extent is a bit of just the team philosophy right now, where if you look at the defensive side of the ball, do they prioritize edge pressure?
No.
So if you're thinking that way defensively, offensively, could you also be thinking, let's prioritize the interior? We want to generate our pressure from the interior, so let's not allow other teams to do it to us.
I think here's what I'll say to that. I can't say the Bears don't prioritize edge pressure.
I
think we don't believe in the type of edge pressure that the Bears are looking to prioritize, which is that guy that essentially can set the edge, which is that guy that is going to be in the backfield, but maybe is not the focal point, which is why you paid $16-plus million to Dayo Odengbo, who's basically the big 290-pound body that's going to be on the edge that if you run at him, you will be caught. He's going to help you shut down the running game. I think their focus, and Dennis Allen has talked with me about this as well, is you feel better about the pressure coming up the middle, and that creates that edge pressure in a sense, because guys are going to have to pick a direction to run.
I think they don't prioritize it. And I'm not even saying it's wrong, because the reality is Dennis Allen's not going to be in base defense very much. This is going to be a heavy nickel team. They could go seven DBs at times. And if you're going to play that way, I don't know that you need to prioritize having multiple elite edge rushers. You can bank on Montez Sweat having a bounce back year and generate as much pressure as possible from the interior. My lack of belief comes from, I don't know that Grady, and again, lack of belief, I don't know that Grady Jarrett is going to be better than he's been. I don't know that Dio's your pressure answer. And I don't know that Jervon Dexter is going to develop into an elite three technique that's going to be able to like generate monster pressure numbers from the interior. So it just feels like banking on a lot of guys who, look, not, none of those guys ranked top 40 in pressures last year. Montez Sweat was the closest, but Grady Jarrett was in the 60s. Jervon Dexter was 60th. So it's, I hope that they're right and that the pressure works from the interior, but I don't know that it will. And I think it's just a philosophy of, we want to be strong up the middle and we'll prioritize the edges less on both sides of the line.
Is the philosophy, though, that, and I think this is where adding Grady Jarrett in may be a little bit more of a step, and I, surprising enough to me, what we hear about Jervon is that he's kind of become the leader of that defensive line. Heard that from Montez Sweat a little bit last week, but like, is the priority here bring somebody in who is very similar in early on in the last season in pressure rates to what you were getting from Andrew Billings, who was dominating in pass rush win rate, where if there's a focus on anybody else on this defensive line, Jervon Dexter's game is on that next level. It is that dominant player, and we want to add that guy opposite Jervon. Maybe. Or right next to Jervon. That's, to me, kind of where bringing in Grady Jarrett does help you. And I think Grady Jarrett and Jervon Dexter is probably your starting defensive interior right now.
I would say, yeah, I think so.
So you've got Andrew Billings as the backup. You've got Shamar Turner behind him. Just creating that other guy that can come in and create that pressure.
They also, like, again, I'm mentioning the nickel defense because they might play three gap defenders and have Montez 100%. Sweat the only guy on the edge.
100%. It could be that as well. And we know Dennis Allen is very big at playing odd fronts. He's very big at going, you know, just different defensive setups that you wouldn't expect, like, a 4-3 guy to bring to the table.
There will be, I'm certain of this, there will be times where Kyler Gordon becomes your de facto second edge rusher because he's nickel blitzing from relatively close to the line.
Yeah.
And you can play an odd front with three gap defenders and Montez Sweat and a nickel corner as your primary edge.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the Bears do on this D-line. I think the biggest thing right now is the fact that, and I said, does PFF kind of – let me throw this at you. This is their projected starting lineups. And you tell me the last time we came into a season just kind of knowing – I'll bet you could name the entire lineup. Quarterback Caleb Williams, locked in. Running backs 1 and 2, DeAndre Swift, Roschon Johnson. Feels like it's locked in right now. DJ Moore, Luther Burden, Roma Dunze is your wide receiver room.
Sure.
Cole Kmet is your starting tight end.
Don't think that's true, but go ahead.
Okay, question mark there. Not bad, but either way, right? At worst, your starting tight end could be Cole Kmet.
Yeah.
Right? Braxton Jones, Joe Tooney, Drew Dolman, Jonah Jackson, Darnell Wright. That's the offense, the projected offense from PFF right now. There's not a question mark there at all. I maybe you for Cole Kmet, but like, I don't know if Colston Loveland just comes in and destroys Cole as the starting tight end right now. We'll see. We'll don't know how 12 personnel is going to run, but we have seen Ben Johnson, right, like he did in Detroit, take a guy who was the projected starter and go, yeah, I'm not really feeling you right now.
I think, when Ben Johnson was there, they took Sam Laporta high in the second round, and he was immediately tight end one. And my question would just be, if you took Colston Loveland to be tight end two, then you shouldn't have used the 10th pick on a tight end.
Who was starting before? It was Hockenson, right? Yeah, did they trade TJ?
They traded him.
Did they trade him after they drafted?
No, before.
That's what I thought. It was the season before, right? Okay.
Yeah, and that was kind of a different deal because they didn't draft him, and he was coming up on the extension window and just didn't
fit. They didn't want to extend him. They got rid of a lot. Same thing with DeAndre Swift. Defensively, though, Grady Jarrett, Jervon Dexter, your defensive interior, Dio and Montez. Austin Booker getting thrown in there as a third edge. Interesting. We'll see. Tremaine Edmonds, TJ Edwards, your linebackers, Jalen Johnson, Tyreek Stevenson, Kyler Gordon as your DB unit, and Jaquan Brisker and Kevin Byard at the safety position for you. Like, say, this is the first time I've come into a season knowing who my lineup was going to be, dare I say, since probably 2010?
Yeah.
Like, I feel, and it's not even like, oh, I know who the lineup is going to be. Like, you feel optimistic, like, oh, I think you got a lot of the right pieces. The big question is, does the quarterback work out? By the way, we've done everything this offseason to bring in a guy who helps the quarterback work out.
Well, I think last year even the questions were the offensive line. Like, there were, every year has been, who's going to be the center? Will it be Ryan Bates or will it be Coleman Shelton?
Yeah.
Where's Tevin Jenkins going to fit in? Now it just kind of, like, we know what the offensive line is going to look like, whether or not Braxton's a starter, but we know what the other four positions will look like concretely. Defensively, we know what the lineup's going to be. The only big question for me would be that Austin Booker third edge.
Yeah.
How much play time is he really going to get, especially if they're never in base defense? I'm also kind of in the same spot I was a year ago. The position group I have the most confidence in by a country mile is the secondary.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie to you. I think we underestimate how important Jaquan Brisker is to that defense. And I've, like, when I'm watching him at OTAs, you know Tremaine Edmonds is calling checks and stuff like that. But the person you hear is Jaquan.
Yeah.
And immediately after you lost Jaquan Brisker, the defense falls off a cliff. Now, you also lost Andrew Billings. There's a couple other things that play into that. But your run defense got tremendously worse.
Yep.
When Jaquan Brisker went out.
Yep.
Like, I truly think having him back is going to be such a difference maker for this team, and hopefully he's able to be healthy.
I hope so.
Because when I'm sitting here hearing, hey, we in Boss, we got Boss, hey, Zebra, it's all Jaquan.
He's good, man. He was good in college. He's been good in the pros. It's just health has been the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And he's a reckless player, and I'm not saying that as a criticism. It is complimentary. Like, he views himself as a weapon when he's on the field.
Yeah.
And he will use his body as a weapon. That can result in injury. It's just the reality of playing NFL football.
Yeah.
But he's a great player. And I've always loved the upside. I just don't know that he's going to get an extension because of the way he plays and because of how susceptible he's been. And frankly, when it's this many head injuries, you start to get, like, a little wary of, it's not that fun watching him in those collisions anymore.
If he has a healthy season, is he a re-signed candidate for you, or are the injuries too concerning?
Well, it depends. I mean, they're going to have so many decisions to make. They freed up a little bit of space this year with the Joe Tooney extension, yeah. But next year kind of gets a little messy in terms of cap. It's going to be dependent. Like, they're going to have to make decisions, and unfortunately, right now, I kind of feel like Jaquan Brisker is one of those, we'd like to keep you, but the reality is we can't, guys.
Yeah.
Because if you have to choose between Kyler Gordon and Jaquan Brisker, you're choosing Kyler Gordon.
Well, and Kyler's gotten extended already.
Right, so that's my point. Yeah. Like, that decision has been made.
Yeah.
And I kind of see Jaquan Brisker on that cutting room floor, but, you know, the salary cap's not real. And
that's, like, and Ryan Poles is great at making it not real. And if anything, that is the part I love the most about Ryan Poles.
He's done a really good job of making everything kind of year to year without actually making it year to year.
Yeah.
If you want to be, and it's been discussed, I think, at the owners' meetings where they're like, we got to figure out a way to stop this. If you want to be cash rich and play cash rich football, you can circumvent the hell out of the salary cap. You can make it a complete myth.
Yeah.
Just look at the LA Rams, who spent $450 million, nearly double what the cap was at the time,
yeah,
in a single offseason to win the Super Bowl because ownership said, blank check, let's do it. Like that. That
my favorite part
happen.
Of that is converting Odell Beckham's money into Bitcoin. Like,
yeah.
Let's go get one of the best wide receivers still on the market and see what happens.
It's no different than the Eagles signing Saquon Barkley to a massive deal. And I'm not talking about this current extension. I'm talking about the one they signed him last offseason.
Yeah.
They signed him to an enormous deal, and then X amount is a signing bonus, and you look at his cap hit, and it's $3.1 million. And you're like, oh, how did that happen? That, because they were willing to put cash into the player.
Yeah.
And they would put money into an escrow account, and they were cash rich enough to get this done. So if you want to behave that way, there are ways around it. And if Jaquan Brisker's good enough and earns it, you'll make it happen.
Yeah.
But it also, the cap is real up until a point that it's not. Read the New Orleans Saints. So you don't want to get yourself in trouble doing it.
Well, and that's probably why I say, like, to me, the most confident I am in Ryan Poles is in that cap circumvention, if you will, or being able to work his way around it. Because when you look at how he's worked out all of these contracts, there's players on these deals that are like, you're instrumental in the future of Caleb Williams, but also your contract will end by the time it's time to pay Caleb Williams, yep. and we'll come back to the table and we'll restructure and we'll figure things out to keep you here because we value you as a player.
100%.
But the plan is that he's going to be really good and we're going to have to pay him probably almost $500,000. We need the money. And you're not going to be that money. We'll figure that out when we get there. And I just think that is, that's the difference between the LA Rams and the New Orleans Saints. And what you have to understand with that as a Bears fan is if you are the Rams, guess what? There's going to be a year where you have to reset. It's going to suck. There's going to be a season yep. where you go, man, I just don't think this is it. Why don't we don't have this piece? We don't have this player. And then you figure it out by the end of the season because you've got some of the pieces in place enough to get to the playoffs. Oh, and then the next year, you add Davante Adams. Like, literally, coming into this season, it was like, well, they're banged up and they let a bunch of people go that you felt were important for the team.
Yep.
And then they got healthy, made the playoffs, and then they let a bunch more players go, and they added Davante Adams.
Think like what the Patriots did so many times, where you'd look at, they'd release, who was the edge rusher name? I can't think of his name. They traded him to Arizona, like a week before the season started. My
first thought was Richard Seymour.
That's who I was going
to. No, this was post-Richard Seymour era. They traded him to, I can't think of his name, regardless. Patriots traded this guy to Arizona, and everybody's like, what is Bill Belichick doing? He's a great player. But they had to make certain decisions, and they won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Chandler Jones.
I had to look it up.
Pro Bowl caliber player. He played really well in Arizona. Yeah, and the Patriots.
He was also good for Arizona.
Shipped him out, and you're like, what are they doing? And they won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to make decisions on players, and you might not like it at the time, but it's also not going to be the end of the world. If the team is going to be good, it's just the reality of the salary cap era.
And I think that's the thing, too. The Chandler Jones is a great one because you basically traded him before you extended him.
Yeah, exactly.
You traded him before you extended him. He was balling. He had his best years in Arizona. And you could look at that and be like, wow, you could have really kept that player on your team and done a, you know, built the defense around him. And yet, how many more Super Bowls from that time? 2015, they traded him away. They didn't win again after that, did they? Did they win again after that? They won that year. They won the year they traded him. So, I don't know, maybe. But I do get what you're saying. Like, yeah. You continue to win. You won the Super Bowl that year. Sometimes you got to chance it all for that one piece, and it ended up working out for him in that situation. So, we'll see what ends up happening. The Bears could have a trade in place.
Yeah,
No, not even going to give it life?
This isn't going
to
happen.
Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. I thought this was phenomenal. This is off-season content at its peak. And I even tap in with this on Pro Football Talk. I even watched the video that's always attached at the top to kind of see how they were feeling about it on the possibility of Tyreek Hill being traded and the wide receiver that could be traded for him. They put this in the article. Basically, what they come out and say is there's no contender that would think about trading for Tyreek Hill. And that he's at a point where why would you, if you're not contractually obligated to him, why would you want to take a chance on him? A lot of off-the-field stuff yep. that plays into it, still a good player on the field. What he says here, he says, the Bears would also be an intriguing option, especially with former Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy on the Bears coaching staff, because that means something. But they're currently loaded at receiver. It wouldn't work unless they sent DJ Moore to Miami as part of the trade. It's a long shot for the Bears or any team, but all it takes is one team to convince itself that Hill can be a difference maker, the guy who can help a team that is close to the mountaintop finish the climb. Shay, are the Bears anywhere close to where Tyreek Hill puts you over the top?
Maybe. I mean, it's a tough question to answer. He couldn't put the Dolphins over the top, despite having 1,700-yard receiving seasons. You know, last year he played a little hurt, missed some time, still had almost 1,000-yard season, still had caught almost 90 passes. He's a routine 120-catch guy. He's a routine 1,500-plus-yard receiver.
Yeah.
He's an incredible player. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's going to go down as one of the great wide receivers we've ever seen play the sport. Obviously, there are off-field concerns, the arrests, the domestic violence stuff.
Yep.
I'm going to get this out of the way off the top. I'm not playing morality police in the NFL. There are people in this league who are guilty of horrible things. And the NFL has decided, in many cases, that they're okay with it as long as it's a productive player.
Yeah.
Like Deshaun Watson is still employed. Like, consider how many people have done horrible things, yeah, and the NFL has decided if you're any good or we believe you're serviceable,
we don't care.
We're good.
Yeah.
So my position has always been, why should I beat myself up and care about it? If the league is telling me they don't care, that you can basically be an axe murderer, but if you'll throw 40 touchdowns, we're good,
yeah,
then why should I beat myself up and spend energy on it? My question is simple. Is Tyreek Hill better on the field than DJ Moore?
Yes.
Then in a vacuum where this trade could potentially happen, I would be open to it. Also, if you just noticed me on my phone being unprofessional.
Oh, here we go.
It's because I was on SpotTrack running the trade to see what the consequences would be financially for the Bears.
Right.
In a one-for-one DJ Moore for Tyreek Hill move, the Bears would save $6 million in cap space. They'd go from $14 million to $20
million. Now, here's where it gets iffy, I guess you will, if you will. One, do the Miami Dolphins still view DJ Moore as a valued piece where you're talking about him as a first-round trade back compensation? Because what the Dolphins owner basically said is, listen, we're willing to listen to anything, but if you're not calling with two first-round picks, basically hang up the phone.
Yep.
You're going to have to send a pick as well as DJ Moore for Tyreek Hill, and you have to hope that they value DJ Moore still as first-round pick value like the Bears did when they traded the first overall pick.
The Dolphins can say whatever they want. They're not getting two first-round picks for Tyreek Hill. Like, that's not happening. It's just – and if that's what the demand is, then they simply –
you really don't want to trade him.
Will not trade Tyreek,
yeah,
Hill.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. What did they get him for from Kansas City?
If I'm not mistaken, I think two first round picks, right?
Like, it's not going to cost that. He's on the wrong side of 30. He showed decline with injury last year. The speed, who knows when it goes, but when it leaves, he's effectively done as a player because it is his elite skill.
Yep.
That's the game breaking thing that separates him.
Five picks. A first, a second, and a fourth are included.
Yeah. So they didn't.
So a first,
they didn't
a
give
and a fourth.
They didn't, yeah, give up two firsts for him. They're going to get two firsts back. You're out of your mind. No, that's
now
not going to happen.
He has had a much better season than he ever had in. Actually, two much better seasons than he ever had in.
No, he was record breaking
in Kansas City. So maybe that plays into it.
But he also was 27 when they traded for,
yeah,
him, and now he's 31.
He's 30 years old. Yeah, he'll be 31 this year. So it's. I think here's the part for me that maybe is the bigger conversation here. I don't think that the Bears are in the market of trading for Tyreek Hill. I think this is, we needed something to talk about.
Of course.
And we know that if we throw Bears in this, that Bears podcast, hello, will pick it up and they will run with it and they will create a conversation. The real conversation here, I think, is, and this has been created, is DJ Moore a part of the long-term future of the Chicago Bears with the Luther Burden draft pick where you look at it and go, they're very similar.
I'd make it even more concise.
Oh, here we go.
Is DJ Moore expendable? End of question. You just signed him to a wildly lucrative contract extension a year ago.
Yep.
And you got, look, you can deny it if you're a fan, whatever you want to do. But the reality is last year was marred by DJ Moore potentially having bad body language, sitting by himself on the bench. And we can debate. He always does it, whatever we want to do. But when you have your new head coach come in and prioritize body language,
yeah,
then it only fuels that fire a little bit more.
Is Luther Burden the body language answer, though?
I don't know.
I feel like Luther Burden is, and by the way, both really good wide receivers. I feel like Luther Burden is DJ Moore without the slight bit of like playfulness. Like DJ Moore is always like very stoic face. He's always kind of, yeah, you know what it is. It is what it is. Whatever. We'll get through it. I feel like Luther Burden is that without the like the little smile that DJ will throw in there to let you know like I'm joking, guys.
The thing with DJ Moore too, though, is like, look, if you're going to try to upgrade a position this offseason, like right now, June 1st has passed and now we can make all the post-G1 trades and have fun with it. If you're trying to upgrade a position on this team, I don't think it's wide receiver. Would be kind of where I land on the whole thing. But I don't feel like DJ Moore's a long-term piece. And I do think the end is coming faster than people realize, barring him truly having a top 10 wide receiver season and being firmly wide receiver one on this team. Two things I also don't know are going to happen. He's never been a top 10 receiver, ever. That's not a shot.
Yeah.
It's arguably...
He lives in that top 15, top 20 range.
It's arguably the most loaded talent group in the league, too. Like, he's just... He's not that. I think Rome has a chance to be wide receiver one this year.
I agree.
I think there's an outside shot. Luther Burden could be wide receiver one this year. Having both Cole Kmet and Colston Loveland cuts into the availability of targets. Like, is DJ that much of a piece at this point that he's totally inexpendable? You have to keep him. He's a cornerstone. I don't think so.
Here's where I would say I would push back on that. And I get it. Everybody wants to complain about the body language last year. Maybe he did have bad body language. Listen, there's a lot of bad body language when your quarterback gets sacked 68 times and you're not moving the football.
Everyone had bad body language.
Everybody had bad body language. You want to see bad body language? Go look at Flus on that final play where he throws his head back screaming to the sky.
Go watch some Montez Sweat, man. Because I know we say injury, but that he wasn't moving at even 75%.
There's so much to me where I look at last season and I do say it's a flush. It's tough to say for a season, but you kind of got to flush it down the drain because you went from one mindset in that building to what feels like completely a different one. And I think it would be very similar to, like, one of our teammates here has said many times, going from Dick Geron to Lovie Smith, how much of a change that next season was. You would have left that previous season going, there's nobody here that I want on this team. Like, maybe Olin Krutz, and I feel kind of good. Then you get into the 2005 season, you're like, oh, wait, they may actually have something here. This might actually be a team that's fighting for something. So I think a lot of changes could come into place. When it comes to long term, though, I think it is similar to the conversation that we had at the left tackle, where my goal right now with where this team is to never have to worry about a player's productivity and production. The one thing that we do know, which is something they couldn't do enough last season, is if you get the ball into DJ Moore's hands, he's going to be productive. I never have to worry about that. Not saying I'm worried about it with Rome, not saying I'm worried about it with Luther. I don't know it yet, though. Roma Dunze caught 55% of his passes last season. I don't know if he ups that up to 65% this year. I'm hoping he does. I believe he will. But that's a question that still needs to be answered.
And again, that's why I'm saying I'm not trading DJ Moore today. And I'm not looking to upgrade wide receiver today. But the longer term conversation is, would you be okay if DJ Moore wasn't on this football team? If a move came up that the Bears decided they wanted to make.
Yeah. Preseason, I'm not there. Here's where I will say maybe the caveat comes in. If we are nearing the trade deadline and you're seeing the Caleb Rome relationship flourish, the Caleb Colston relationship flourish, the Caleb Luther Burden relationship flourish, and there's a clear need at a position where it's like, if you don't have this, you won't take that next step as a team. I'd be willing to hear the conversation on moving on from DJ Moore.
But like, what's the reality that's, because I'm not doing it right now, and I don't think I do it at the trade deadline. I'm kind of looking the next offseason, because what's the reality, one, that like we're going to get to late October and go, we need an edge rusher, and that somebody will be willing to flip you an edge rusher of value for DJ Moore?
I think it's the same conversation we're having right now with Trey Hendrickson.
Yeah, like the reality.
which would literally be, well, they don't need wide receivers, though.
No,
yeah, they don't need wide receivers.
But it's also...
But it would be that similar situation, like somebody's not happy.
But the point I'm making, if you're trading DJ Moore at the deadline, you're not doing it for an impact player to put you over the top. You're doing it for a draft pick.
Yeah.
That's where it doesn't really make sense to me. Why would I cut off my nose to spite my face?
Yeah.
Why would I, like, if we're having a good season and we feel like we're this position short, I'd rather sell a pick to get that position than willingly neuter a wide receiver position just to, like, pick up a draft pick.
Yeah.
You're not getting Max Crosby for DJ Moore plus. Like, that's not happening at the deadline.
We'll see how that Raiders season goes.
Yeah, but again...
That would be insane, though.
If you want Max Crosby from the Raiders because they're like dead and they have no choice but to move on, it's not DJ Moore.
It's draft
two
capital.
First round
picks.
It's
draft capital. I'm giving you the capital. No, I agree with you there. I'll be honest with you, and I am You know, I know Waddle has been on this when looking at DJ Moore, and he knows more about football than I'll ever know, right? There's a bunch, even Yurko, right? Same kind of conversation where you're upset with DJ, but being in the locker room with these guys, seeing DJ, seeing him sit in his locker room after a win with the same face after a loss, like.
It's just who he is?
To me, it truly is just who he is. And I think it's very hypocritical of people to come after a guy who is on a team that lost how many weeks in a row? Did we get up to 6 last year? 6 weeks in a row losing? And then say, wow, really don't like the body language of that guy. Yeah, we just lost 6 effing weeks in a row.
Yeah, I also think it's just he's become an easy target for it.
100%.
He's spent his career on losing teams. And I think when that happens, it kind of just becomes you. Like, it's hard to get that label off of you. And I'm not saying DJ Moore's a loser, but it's all you've done in your career is lose.
8 straight games we lost in a row. Yeah. Hey, guess what? By the end of the season, I might have a little scowl on my face. I might be a little upset. And
he's probably sick of it.
Listen, I will say this too. I think that you can live in both worlds. When you're going through that in the moment, there's things you're going to regret. I think Ben Johnson coming in and saying, I think being a palms up team is a sign of weakness, is exactly why you have Ben Johnson here, why you hope that he does turn this team around from being a palms up team to a team that's going to do something about it. And the reason we were a palms up team last year is because we didn't have a head coach that had the common sense to go, maybe I should help the rookie out.
Well, and it's why, look, I'm staying away from doing the win total stuff or like thinking I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. But the reality, too, is I'm higher on this team than I am low on them.
Yeah.
And a big part of it is I think there's talent in place. And I do think to an extent we can just flush a lot of what happened last year. And maybe Montez Sweat had a down year, not because he had a lingering injury, but because he was fucking tired of losing.
Yeah.
Because you lost in the most inexplicable way over and over and over again. And there maybe became a feeling in the locker room that, like, even if we play our best, our coach is going to find a way to screw this up.
Yep.
So what's the point? Frankly, the more I've looked back on it, and I've harped on Caleb Williams for taking too many sacks, and I believe that. You can't take the number of sacks that he took last year, and too many of them looked like they were his fault, running backwards in the face of pressure every time.
Yeah.
Even the Seattle game, people call it like the miraculous throw when he's rolling right away from pressure and flips the ball off for a first down on a fourth down play. I watch that play, and I see pressure break off the left side of the line. The middle of the field is open. Why are you running backwards? You made this play so much more difficult than it had to be.
Yeah.
You converted. It was excellent. But if you just hit the back foot, boom, go up, that's what Josh Allen does. That's what all the best quarterbacks do. And I am higher on this team than I am low on them because I think they'll fix a lot of this. Maybe it won't be a 7-step drop out of shotgun for Caleb. Maybe instead it'll be a single step drop where he can hit the back foot, see the pressure, and go.
Yeah.
That's what I need more of. And I think we're going to get it. And I think everybody's body language improves as a result. Nobody's unhappy winning games.
Yeah. And to me, I will say this. I think the sacks are going to be tough, right? That's the one thing where even in this season coming in, I said if Caleb Williams gets to 30 sacks this season, that's great. Because he's going to cause sacks. We know that. The type of quarterback that he is very similar, and I know people are going to lose their minds to this, but it's how Pat Mahomes plays. Pat Mahomes causes a lot of sacks every year. What was he, 47 sacks last season?
Well, no, that's not. He's one of the least sacked quarterbacks in history.
Pat Mahomes had 47 sacks on him last season.
Last year was an anomaly bad, but
what I mean
for his career, he's one of the least sacked QBs in history.
What I mean by that is there's a lot of those moments where you can look at that and say, that's not on the offensive line in front of him. He's fine. Like, Pat Mahomes made that play way harder than it needed to be. And you can still cut that number down. Like, those moments are going to happen, but they can't be the only moments that we see happen. I think we saw that too much from Caleb. PFF credits him with about 19 sacks last season that were on him. I think you could maybe take that number a little bit higher. But I do think a lot of it comes from having bad offensive line play that you don't trust. Having good offensive linemen here this year will play into that.
I'm going to stop you. This is going to break. This is breaking as of 5 minutes ago.
Oh.
And I don't want to have us post a podcast where we don't talk about it.
This Eric, may need to go to the front.
I may even offer you might want to edit this, and we have to have like a quick 10-minute conversation. The NFC North dare I say, is as wide open as it's ever been in history.
What just happened?
Frank Ragnow just retired from the NFL.
Wow.
What?
The Lions All-Pro starting center.
What?
Just retired from football.
What?
He's threatened this going on 3 years now. After last season, he had talked about it. He's struggled. He's been injured.
Yeah.
His body.
He's played through it, but he has been banged up.
He just retired from football.
He's 28 years old.
Here's what I'm going to say. And this is, this isn't going to be Bears content, but I'm just going to detail.
No, this is Bears content because it's literally the division leader just lost their starting center. What just happened, right?
I'm going to just say something. I don't feel like the Lions are the best team in this division anymore.
Number one in your mind? Minnesota?
I'm not going to put a number on. I'm not going to paint that right now. I need some time to process. But I don't think it'll be the Lions. In a single offseason, they have lost both of their coordinators.
Yep.
They have now lost their starting center, who was kind of the linchpin to everything that they wanted to do in the running game. Taylor Decker, I don't know if he's a picture of perfect health. The guard position has been kind of a weakness. People haven't wanted to talk about it. I'm not like, is Christian Mahogany really just the answer for the line? I don't know.
Yeah.
And Penei Sewell's fantastic. But outside of that, like, you've got older Jared Goff without Ben Johnson. You've got a defense that hasn't been meaningfully improved. And your center just retired.
Frank Ragnow comments, he said, I've tried to convince myself that I'm feeling good, but I'm not, and it's time to prioritize my health and my family's future. I've given this team everything I have, and I thought I had more to give, but shout out to Threads for I should have went, and now it's gone. Apparently that leads into an article. He gave it all, is the theme there. I don't know, dude. Like, I'll say this. And I have been one who is very – the Lions still have Dan Campbell at the helm. And that may be the thing that just stabilizes the ship, right? Very similar to the Harbaughs, right? You're not calling the play. The Mike Tomlins, you're not calling the play, but you can stabilize the ship. I believe that they can stabilize the ship. I've watched what losing your best coordinator can do to a team here in Chicago. It didn't go well. Losing your starting center.
It's a lot, man. It's a lot of attrition.
You don't have Philly set up there.
In a single offseason, it's a lot. And, well, I'm glad you brought up Philly because I was just going to bring up, this could be the Eagles of a couple years ago where the Eagles went to the Super Bowl and it felt like Nick Sirianni was the straw that stirred the drink and they lost Shane Steichen. And they lost Jonathan Gannon, both coordinators in a single offseason. And the following year, the defense died on the field. They gave it up. They went to Tampa. They lost their opening round playoff game. Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you the Lions are going to be bad.
Yeah.
But they are not going to be what they were a year ago when they were a monolith that went 15-2. They aren't that. Their defense fell apart at the end of last year. They didn't address it to an extent that I think they needed to. Brad Holmes was arrogant, laughing at the idea they need an edge rusher to pair with Aiden Hutchinson. Now you've lost both your coordinators. Frank Ragnow retires. I don't know, man.
I think the
I feel like this is ripe for the picking for Chicago.
The coordinator is the biggest thing to me. We saw that, right? What changed? Vic Fangio said the same thing walking out the door that Ben Johnson said. Anybody can call this defense. And then we saw Sean decide the next year. And anybody couldn't call that defense. I think that's going to be the thing there where it's like, yeah, the talent is still there. The players are still there. The ability to go out there and get, well, some of the players are still there. Now you lose Frank Ragnow. The ability to go out there and call the same plays that Ben Johnson called that worked is still there. And that may still be the case. But are you getting to a point with this Lions team where you're just losing too much? I think you look at the defense last year, how banged up they were, right? Is everybody coming back perfect? Everyone's 100%? No. It's football. No. Like, and also, you don't have the dude that, I get it, the defense kind of fell off a cliff, but he didn't call a bad defense with basically everyone dead. You don't have that guy on your team anymore either. I think the North is completely wide open. I'm one who probably gives Minnesota more credit than most. because I don't think you move on from Sam Darnold, and Kevin O'Connell's not an idiot.
Minnesota's really difficult to quantify because their roster is phenomenal. Their coach is phenomenal.
The question is,
and if their quarterback is good, they'll be really good.
Yeah.
But if he's not, and I lean more towards that than the other, the history of guys who were effectively service academy quarterbacks in college, and he was, like career 18 pass attempts per game at Michigan.
Yep.
Famously against Penn State, they ran the ball 32 consecutive plays.
Absolutely.
The track record of service academy quarterback style in college to missing your rookie year with double knee surgeries, probably not great.
Well, I'll say this. The injury, I think, plays more into it.
He's Trey Lance.
Those style of quarterbacks, but here's what I'll say. Those style of quarterbacks, how often do they get to the offensive juggernaut-minded head coaches or OCs? Not very often, usually because I'm going to a team that ends up sucking because I'm one of the top quarterbacks in the country we go out there and dominate.
What did I just say? I think he's Trey Lance.
Trey Lance was fine with the few games that he actually got to play with
look, man,
why am I blanking on San Francisco? Kyle Shanahan. He was fine in the little bit you saw from him, and then he got hurt and it was over. Now, if you want to say that get hurt and it was over, that's different.
In the whole draft process, though, I always felt like JJ was more myth than man, like Zach Wilson-esque, where you go, yeah, he won a national title, and like BYU with Zach Wilson was excellent. And you look at JJ and go, he won a national title, all he did was win, but he didn't really throw the ball much. Yeah. And there aren't these, like, there's not a long highlight reel of NFL-level throws that he's made. There's a few, and they're good. And he was good when asked to throw the ball. There were also times he was absolutely terrible to the point they refused to throw the ball. And it feels a little Zach Wilson, like look what he can do in gym shorts, and we're projecting a lot instead of looking what actually happened. I don't know about Minnesota with that quarterback. I now don't know about the Lions with the churn that they've had in the coaching staff and now on their offensive line. Tate Ratledge is going to be asked to start at center for the Lions out of the gate.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. The Packers, I know I have questions. Like I now firmly have big-time questions about every team in this division. And to me, that means it's wide open and anybody can take it.
Listen, the Packers, I think, is the easiest ones to question. And it comes down, I think, the same conversation, though, right? I think there's talent on the Packers. I think you finally, I don't even know if you got the best wide receiver, but I think you got a really good wide receiver in the draft here. At a minimum, I think he'll be talented and healthy, which is something Christian Watson can't say.
I tell you the other disadvantage I'll give to both the Lions and the Packers is they are no longer in the window of paying a rookie quarterback.
Nope.
They are in the window of paying $53 and $55 million, respectively, to their quarterbacks.
And you just lost your Senate. That's insane.
It makes life difficult to live, man. When you have to rely on hit, like if Matthew Golden's not a hit wide receiver one, Packers are in trouble because all they'll have is wide receiver twos. With a quarterback who I don't know is worth the $55 million that's eating your cap sheet.
That's the part that I think really affects them, is especially going up against the defenses that are here in the end, going up against the Vikings, going up against what the Bears probably will be this year with Dennis Allen at the helm. You can't throw that football to a spot where your wide receiver's not, and Jordan Love kind of does it a lot.
The ultimate point of this is, if you're the Bears or you're the Vikings and you're in this division, you have to feel like you are set up better than the rivals you have, that you're set up better for future success and potentially even immediate success than both the Packers and the Lions at this point.
Yeah. That's
unbelievable.
That's unbelievable. It is insane.
I've talked to people. He has brought this up the last couple
multiple
of seasons.
Times, yeah,
it's been a thing where like Frank Ragnow could retire,
but he just keeps coming back. So you're like, oh, it's just a thing.
Well, especially, boy,
here's the finish to the quote I got to hear. This is on Instagram. I've given this team everything I have, and I thought I had more to give, but the reality is I simply don't. I have to listen to my body, and this has been one of the hardest decisions of my life. The Lions organization has been absolutely incredible throughout this process, and I can't emphasize this enough, how grateful I am for this team and all the fans. It was an absolute honor going into battle for you all.
If I'm Brad Holmes, I'm pissed. And I'm not like Frank Ragnow has to do what's right for him and right for his body. You couldn't have done this before the draft, man.
That is the one part where it's like,
because
at least give me that. Or maybe here's the thing.
It's a best laid plans thing where like we feel like we have these pieces solidified And then all of the sudden, one of them retires.
But I think here's the thing, right? We're assuming that he didn't have this conversation at all before the draft. You just said it. We've been talking about this last couple of seasons, that he could be somebody who retires, and he usually ends up coming into the season. More than likely what happened is Frank was like, I don't know, this might be it. And Brad was like, go home, sit, think about it. Because he hasn't been in camp. He hasn't been at OTAs. He hasn't been at
and I don't think
their mini camp would start this
but
week.
But I don't think anybody would have expected a guy who's battled with the issues he's had with his body to show up for voluntary stuff, especially as good as he's been, and you know who he is. I don't know. This is.
I think it's the conversation you had, though, right? Brad Holmes probably being a little cocky in this situation. Same. This can't be the first time Frank has brought this up to
Bad
him.
News for the Lions is good news for the Bears.
I love it. I think the division's wide open, and they don't play the AFC South this year, so things get a lot tougher real quick.
They play the hardest schedule in NFL history. Here's the Lions' layout for this season. They have the hardest schedule in the history of the league. Their center just retired. They lost both their coordinators and half their assistant coaches. The wide receiver coach who turned Amon-Ra St. Brown from fifth-round pick to top five in the NFL, he's a Bear now. Like, you're paying your quarterback who just detonated a playoff game $53 million. That's their reality.
It's starting to line up well. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to say I'm still at 9 wins. Still at 9 wins. But I could be convinced about 10 and 11. Hey, man, we appreciate y'all for tuning in and showing love. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. Let us know how you guys feel in the comments below. Do you think this division is now wide open? Do you think the Bears have a shot at the division? We'll be down there talking with you guys as well. As always, for Shay Norling, it's your boy Pat the Designer, back at it again. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Big Bad Dons. One love. And sorry, Don Burr. Peace.